good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning, I'm J. Marie Schaefer.
And good morning, I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. We're here every week talking to you about wills and trusts and long-term care planning. You can call in. We haven't had calls in a while.
It's been a little bit. Feel free to call in.
Feel free to call in with a question, 518-476-5900. Or if you don't want to call in, you could call our office during the week and make an appointment to see myself or Phil or David in one of our four offices. At 518-465-7581.
No calling in, but sure busy in the offices.
So
people are curious about this stuff for sure. A lot of meetings every week.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, we love to talk to you, try and figure out your problems, what's going on. Sometimes, which we're going to talk about, you know, people come in with problems that we have to fix.
Yeah. I call cleaning up the messes. I was thinking the other day, I think I'd come home on like a Tuesday or Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
and I'm at the stage of my life, J. Marie, where mm-hmm. every day I'm just cleaning up in my home. The three young kids, it's
yes.
come home, clean up dishes, clean up the toys.
Right. And then it starts all over again the next day.
Mm-hmm. It's not like, I cleaned yesterday, we're good for a week. It's a daily occurrence. My youngest, Jolene, she's mm-hmm. 2.5,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. saved the best for last in terms of mm-hmm. the little hurricane as she is.
So
she has a way of finding like the easiest way to make a mess the quickest. Like in our basement, we have this wall of like 18 cubes against the wall in the basement.
Right.
We try to keep a lot of the toys there.
Yes.
And she knows like which of the bins has like the small stuff in it.
Yeah.
So she'll go right there and dump it out.
Just dump the whole thing
right
out.
Away.
Yes.
And you know, so cleaning up messes is a big part of my life currently. Does it mm-hmm. get easier one day or what's the deal?
Yeah, it does. I remember those years of stepping on Legos, and man, they hurt. And then
stepping on a Lego in the dead of night when it's dark is one of the most intense pains of your life.
It is.
For sure.
It sounds funny, too. Once you become an empty nester, you will miss doing a cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, John. I don't know. It's hard to know that when you're in it now, but I know.
Yeah.
Well, then you get dogs, and we have dog toys everywhere.
Okay, right.
So it's not quite the
different
same.
Different types of messes.
Yeah.
It is, but they'll have 10 toys on the floor, and they don't want any of them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
That's true.
So, right, you have to go get another one. So they get their, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
By mail, they get treats once a month and toys,
When my daughter wants a dog, would that be like combining the two bigger mess makers into one big mess maker?
Yeah,
so I don't know. I'm on the fence about it.
I think about that one.
Back to, dogs and children, and dogs sometimes eat those little toys.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. Don't want to have to be at the vet for that.
So like you said at the beginning, we clean up messes in our professional life as well. So if I'm not home cleaning up messes, sometimes I'm at work cleaning up some messes. And, you know, when I say messes, what I'm kind of referring to is it's not always, sometimes it's poor planning or lack of planning, right? So either they didn't plan at all, the family for certain things, or they did some planning that they thought was proper, but there were some deficiencies to that planning.
Right.
And it's not always the case that the planning that they did was not correct completely. There just mm-hmm. might have been better versions of it, or it didn't work out how mm-hmm. everyone hoped it would, and then we have to, you know, backpedal.
That's right.
And clean up some stuff. So I was thinking we could go through some examples that you and I have come across.
Right.
The list I made was even just really recently, and just the last 2 weeks or so stuff I saw, and there's plenty of that. So over the course of our entire practice, we've seen a lot of these things.
Yes, that's right. Every week, you're right, we get someone coming in.
Yeah.
And not because it was ill intention, but just things didn't work out the way they should have.
Right. So the one I saw recently, the first one on my list has to do with something we see somewhat often, I think becoming less and less often, but life mm-hmm. estate deeds.
Yes.
So
that was on my list too.
There we go. So we'll compare notes here. So my scenario, first I'll go and then you can mm-hmm. explain yours. But someone came in and it was the parents.
Right.
So these two parents did a life estate deed transferring the property to their daughter as what we mm-hmm. call the remainderman mm-hmm. interest. So basically how the life estate deed reads, it says, you know, it's from John and Mary to daughter Jane, reserving the right to life use for John and Mary. So as long as they're alive, they can use the property as they always would. They get the same tax exemptions, et cetera. But when they both are deceased, then Mary's interest in this example fully vests. Now, in this scenario where this became deficient is that Mary died before mom and dad.
Yeah, that's a twist.
Uh-huh. And it's not something you would expect usually, but in this scenario, it's only one child that they had. So they only had this one remainder interest on the deed, and she passed away. So why is that a problem? Well, now technically it's part of Mary's estate.
That's right.
So even though, you know, the parents are still alive and they have all these rights, they're going to have to, or someone rather, is going to have to probate Mary's estate. And this interest is going to go according to her will or lack thereof, right? Whoever her beneficiaries are as part of her estate. And we're going to have to go through, you know, that probate proceeding we always talk about trying to avoid. And, oh, by the way, one of the purposes of doing the life estate deed was to avoid probate for mom and dad.
Right.
But I unfortunately, tragically, daughter passed away first. Now we're having to probate daughter's estate.
Right. I could see that getting really complicated if her beneficiaries are children, you know, young children, or, you know, there could be young children owning the interest, but they can't hold it themselves, right? So it has to be held by a guardian for them.
Yeah, it makes the court proceeding more complication. The court might have to put a guardian ad litem in that scenario.
Right.
So, yeah, we were just kind of scratching the surface of it during the consultation because we were talking about some other things, but there's going to be some stuff to potentially, or a lot of stuff potentially, to unpack there. And, you know, the parents to me were like, well, can't we just reverse it?
I was
No, you can't. You know, that's one of the other negatives of life estate deeds is loss of control from the person transferring the property out to somebody else.
They can't change who the remainderman is. They don't have that ability anymore.
Yeah, right. So you can change it while the remainderman is alive if the remainderman agrees. And then sometimes that's a problem. Like if you have a falling out with the person that you gave the property to, I want it back, and they say no, that could be a big problem too. But here, the person can't even say yes or no because she's deceased.
That's right.
And so we're going to have no choice but to probate that estate.
Now,
had
they put that deed in a trust and Mary? No, it wasn't Mary. Jane. Whoever.
Mary.
The daughter.
One of them.
I don't know. The daughter died. I forgot.
I probably mix up the names myself, but you get the idea.
Yeah, I got the idea. If the daughter had died and the house was in a trust, the parents could go in and amend that and name a different beneficiary.
Right. They wouldn't have lost that control like the scenario is here. So a trust would have been probably a much better tactic to achieve our goals.
Right. So my scenario was a little different, and it brings up, you know, the negative of the tax consequences.
Okay. Yep.
So in this case, mom and dad did a life estate deed to three children. Dad got Alzheimer's, so mom decided to sell the house. They were going to move into an apartment, just, you know, like a community. But they're one of many of our, you know, clients up here who had bought that house a really long time ago.
Do I even dare ask what they paid for it? Did they tell you?
It was probably the cost of a new car these days. About $30,000,
$35,000.
Yeah, wild. Yeah, I know, wild. And they were selling it for quite a gain. So they, you know, came in to see me and we talked about the pros and cons. If they sold it that way, their children would have to pay tax on all of that gain. Because when you have a life estate deed and you sell it, the remainderman get most of the money. The parents or the life estate owners get a small percentage of that money.
Yeah. I mean, so what you're referring to, like say they hadn't done any of this or a trust even, it's their primary residence.
Right.
And there's capital gain tax exemptions in that world. If you're spouses and you're both alive, the first $500,000 of gains would have been exempt from taxes.
And that would have been fine. That would have protected them. Right?
Yeah. So they might have been covered 100% there. I don't know what they're selling it for, what the gains were, but it probably would have been 100%, if not close to.
Right.
Because of this life estate deed, they can't invoke that tax exemption. Right. Other than for the small portion that their quote unquote life estate's worth, this kind of calculation, but it's a very small percentage.
It was a very small percentage, and that's based on their ages. So, you know, we had the conundrum of, you know, we could gift, the children could gift the deed back to the parents, then they could take that capital gains exclusion. But now we're undoing
the Medicaid,
planning. Yeah. Right. Now we're putting money back in their name. And we know Dad has Alzheimer's, right?
Yeah. That's very risky. How long was it in the trust for? I mean, how long was it in the life estate deed for?
It was in the life estate deed for, I think it was 4 years. So we were getting really close to the five. Right?
Yes, we're almost at that 5-year look back that we always talk about for protection purposes. We have a dad who has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's. So the potential of needing nursing home care in the somewhat near future is even more increased.
That's
to
right.
transfer it back to them to get that tax benefit.
Right.
Super duper risky.
It was risky.
Yeah.
But so the way in their case, you know, what we did was we went with the transferring it back to the parents.
Mm.
The money went into Mom's name. And then we did a community Medicaid application.
For dad. A lot going on there, huh?
There's a lot going on here. Right. But in the end, they decided saving the taxes was worth it. Right. I could see there could be some case. It was a close call there.
Sure.
Right? It could be in another situation where you decided, I don't want to lose any of that, you know, 4 years, and we'll just pay the taxes.
Well, I guess in that case, the tax is 100% going to happen if they sell the house.
Right.
That way, the need for nursing home care and et cetera is not 100%. So,
right. That's right.
No, you're kind of rolling the dice, but that situation could have been avoided with alternative planning.
It could have been. That's right.
Now, and by the way, if they hadn't sold the house till after Mom and Dad are both deceased, wouldn't have had the issue. They would have got a step up in basis date of death value. But you can't plan for that. You don't know how. Even if you tell me I'm going to die in this house.
Yes.
You don't know that.
Oh, you know how many people have said that to me?
I'm going to say probably everyone.
You can try your best.
Yeah,
but it doesn't always work out how you want it.
Yeah.
Tell you. Yeah, I always ask them, you know, when we're planning, do you think you're going to move? You know, no, never, right?
Yeah, right.
Never.
Right,
this is it.
That's what you say. Yeah.
That's what people want. So you have to keep that in mind and try to work around it, I guess. Huh?
You do.
And most times the family and then the people are going to do everything they possibly can to make that happen.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of scenarios where it just is not feasible, whether from a medical perspective or from a financial perspective.
Right.
Why not try and protect yourself, right?
But yeah.
Planning not to go in a nursing home, but you're also covered if you do. Right?
Yeah. So with those life estate deeds, a few other negatives that we didn't talk about. Those are our two scenarios we ran into, and those are common ones. Another one I mentioned briefly, loss of control. So like I said, if you have a falling out or you want to change it and the people you transferred it to won't cooperate with that change, pretty much out of luck. Right. So that loss of control.
Out of luck. Right.
And then if you... if you sell the property while you're alive. So one of the two reasons that people do life estate deeds most commonly is that asset protection feature. Mm-hmm. If it's transferred more than 5 years before we need nursing home care, it's protected. Mm-hmm. It's an exempt asset. However, if it's sold while they're alive, Medicaid has these tables they use. Medicaid has tables for everything.
They do. That's right.
But they have these tables they use to assess a value to the life estate interest upon sale.
That's right. Based on your life expectancy, it's a complicated formula, you know, how long they think you're going to live. And somehow they turn that into a percentage of the sales proceeds that you're going to get.
And it could be rather significant. So say like the person's already in a nursing home. It's a common scenario, right? The person's in a nursing home and the family is saying, why are we going to keep this house now? You know, mom and her dad don't live there anymore. Right. We don't want to rent it out and become landlords. It's just a money pit because guess what? The expenses don't go away, like taxes, et cetera.
Right.
So let's sell it, which makes logical sense. But then we have to tell them, sure. But if we do that, you know, somewhere in the realm of 20%, let's call it on average, is going to have to go back to them. And
guess what?
Medicaid has a claim against that.
That's right. And we'll talk more about how to prevent that from happening right after the break.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the second half of the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. We're talking about, you know, estate planning messes, right? Things that may happen intentionally or unintentionally that we need to kind of come in and clean up and fix after the fact.
And as often happens with these types of shows, when we talk about lists, we're still on the first item. But I promise we'll be moving on in a moment. So we were talking about life estate deeds and some of the negatives. Life estate deeds are used as a planning technique, less commonly now, but I think more common in the past, of protecting a house from long-term care needs and also avoiding probate. And we talked about a few negatives that we've come across. One more I wanted to point out is, you know, you're putting other people on your deed in a way.
True, that's true.
Yeah, so there's a liability aspect. Let's say that one of those people gets sued because they're in some kind of accident or whatever the case is, or they're in some kind of tax arrears, or they're getting divorced, right? They're on your deed.
They're on your deed.
They could become a lien now against this property because of that person's liability, so it's exposing it.
That's right, to their liability. Yeah. While you're still alive, you're exposed to your kids, you know, liabilities.
Right.
After you're gone, that's their problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, then they would have inherited anyway. That becomes their issue.
But while you're alive and you're living there, that's your problem. If you want to sell that house, that lien of your child would have to be paid off.
That's absolutely right. So that could be a big impediment. So, and the life estate deed conversation on the last note that often we can achieve all the same goals a life estate deed would achieve, avoiding probate, protecting assets from long-term care needs with some kind of Medicaid asset protection trust. And all of those pitfalls that we just mentioned are not applicable that type of planning. So really much, much safer form of planning. So let's move on to another mess we've seen in the past. I have one here that we're kind of currently going through for a client. We're trying to probate a will. Will's quite old. Not too old. I think maybe from the early 2000s. But what the will is missing is something called a witness attestation page.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So, Jay Marie, when we, you know, to sign a valid will, there's what we call formalities in New York. You know, it has to be, the person who's signing has to be competent. The will has to be witnessed by two uninterested parties that are over the age of 18.
Right.
And those witnesses typically actually sign twice.
Right.
So they sign once on that same page that the will creator, what we call a testator, signs right underneath their signature.
Right.
But then what you should do as an attorney, or if you're not an attorney, someone else is doing the will, is have this additional page after that the witnesses sign again. And it's this affidavit, this witness affidavit that states certain things like, we were in front of the person when they signed it. The person could communicate, could read and write, can speak the English language, et cetera. Yes. And
we saw them sign the will.
In front of us.
Yeah. It must have been what I did. Okay.
It states all those things, and it's additional validation to the to the court eventually that this was done properly. Now, if that page is missing, what happens, Jane Marie? So we submit this will to the court.
Right.
What happens here?
So it's not fatal to your case, but now you have to go find those witnesses and have that sign them affidavit when you're submitting it to probate.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So in this case, let's say the will is 25 years old, right? So these witnesses, and oftentimes the witnesses might have been, if it was done by an attorney, it might have been staff members.
Right.
Maybe those staff members were older at the time and now either deceased or
retired,
a lot older.
And no one knows where they are.
Yeah, gone away.
Yeah.
Gone away. That's right.
So the case we're dealing with took us a while. We, through different techniques and with the help of the clients and et cetera, we were able to find these two witnesses.
Well, that's good.
It's, well, we're like 6 months in now.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So 6 months of delay because of this.
Well, I said that's good because I had a case where we couldn't even locate the witnesses.
Well, yeah.
Right, that's the
first. Sometimes
problem.
You can't even get past that first step, and then that becomes a whole thing.
Right.
In this case, we were able to.
Right. All right.
So what happens in the scenario, we have to have the court send us a certified copy of the will right. that we submitted to them, and we have to provide a copy to each of the witnesses and have mm-hmm. them sign an affidavit after death.
Right.
One has cooperated. One just won't respond to us.
Oh boy.
And we're still in the phase where the court probably wouldn't, mm-hmm. you know, eventually we're probably going to be able to get by with the right. signature of one when we show due diligence within our right. efforts to get the other to sign. But those right. due diligence efforts are quite high.
Yeah.
And
it's taking a lot of time. It's delaying the probate.
Time, costs of, money. You know, trying to get this witness to sign.
And why wouldn't that witness sign? Yeah.
Yeah. And
who knows?
We don't even know. It's just she's being unresponsive in this case, despite mm-hmm. our efforts. And we know where she works and where she lives. You don't want to harass the person. But
yeah, maybe she sees a letter from a law firm and rips it up because it's a scam.
Right. Who knows? Who knows? No one likes letters from attorneys. Let's be honest.
No, it's scary. Right.
So we're going to be able to get through this, but the client's not happy. It's created significant delays. And, right. you know, this is a pretty easy one. I don't know the attorney who drafted the will or how it was done, but mm-hmm. just including that last this witness affidavit page at the time the yeah. will is signed would right. have avoided this situation completely.
Absolutely. You know, most, you know, attorneys who do estate planning, they're going to have that. We do that with every will. I've never signed a will without one.
Right.
Right. And that's sometimes a problem if you do a will on your own, right?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I don't even know for sure if it was done by an attorney. It could have been right. I don't know if there's a printed offline version back then, but, right. you know, you go to Staples and buy a Bloomberg right. will or whatever
yeah,
they have
right.
back at that time.
And it may have the affidavit or may not. You may think it's not necessary, right?
Yeah.
So you don't sign it. Yeah.
Plenty of scenarios where that might not work out. So, you know, one that was easily avoidable, but we're dealing with the mess and we're cleaning it up, but right. taking a while.
Well, so that reminds me of one I had quite a while ago. So, but this was even stranger. So the witnesses, they just signed it. They didn't print their name and the addresses were hard to read.
So that wasn't really legible?
It was hardly legible. So we had a hard time just figuring out who the witnesses were. And I remember the, I think it was the sister of the decedent, like, she knew that he was in this apartment and he probably had it signed like downstairs at like a Staples or I don't know.
Yes,
no, it was a real estate office, I think.
Okay.
And she was like trying to track down and go there and see, do you remember my brother coming down signing it? And this is like, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like see who worked there, you know.
Yeah. Well, like, who knows? Maybe they pulled someone not off the street per
yeah,
se, but you know, like.
Be. Right. But it was completely illegible, right? Like you couldn't figure out the name at all.
You go around the office and say, can you read this?
Yeah.
But you did.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually a fun... Brady yeah. came, yeah. One of our young associates came to me yeah. and it was written in cursive.
So you couldn't read it to begin with?
Cursive.
He asked me for my opinion on what I thought the name and address was because
okay.
he wasn't so sure.
Yeah.
So if you do it in cursive, no one under 30 is going to be able to find those
yeah.
witnesses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even,
sadly,
just, even if it's
right.
neat.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
It's a lost art.
What is
yeah.
this language? I don't know, right?
Oh, boy.
So in this one is... Do we think we're going to be able to mm-hmm. clean up that mess, or is it one that we may not be able to get the will mm-hmm. probate?
Oh, no, this happened like ages ago.
Oh, it's an old one.
It's an old one. Right. We had to do affidavits and all that because we couldn't locate them.
Like handwriting affidavits and whatnot, or?
Yes, yeah, to prove that was the decedent or the testator, right.
Yeah, so like the alternate means when you can't find the witnesses is even more difficult mm-hmm. and you have to go right. through a lot of hoops before the court mm-hmm. will even allow you to go to that, you know, backup mm-hmm. step. So,
right. That's, yeah, admitting a copy of a will and the courts are very reluctant to just, you know. Well, no, it's the original, but it's similar to
yeah,
like
right.
having a copy of the will, not the original.
And right.
There's a lot of hoops to prove that's the real will.
So another one that I had recently, this was actually a friend asking me for some advice. And mom had drafted a trust. Right. And
so back up. Mom drafted the trust?
Well, no, I'm sorry. I said that wrong.
Yes.
Mom had a trust created. It was done by an attorney.
Yeah, I thought you were saying that she did like
one
of those online.
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
So it actually was done by an attorney.
Okay, good.
And there's a vacation house. And two timeshares, mm-hmm. actually, which commonly we don't put timeshares in trust. Well, we do, but there's a lot of issues with that I won't get into. But one of the main properties was this vacation property on the Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. And mom had two daughters, mm-hmm. you know, everything was left to them equally for the most part. Where it gets complicated is there was this other poorly written clause about having to keep it in trust for 10 years and them splitting up time of use, which, okay, there might be some complications there. Where it gets really crazy is they said also you have to give this group of people use. And it was ambiguous as to how much use they have per year. And the way it was written, it would be like one, person one, Jay Marie and her family.
What?
That's... Two, this person and friends.
Oh my gosh.
So what does that even mean?
I know. How many people are talking about?
Sounds like a TV show.
Yeah. So it, the list was 10.
Right.
But but when you write like number one is Jay Marie and family, that I don't know what that means. That could be 10 people right there.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the friend, she was asking me, well, you know, we want to, can we just sell the property or
can I
buy my sister out and get rid of all this rights? And I said, you know, not really, not on your own.
Because all those other 10 people have some kind of ambiguous interest in this. Right?
Correct. And I don't think the sister would agree with it anyway. So I said, you know, basically the only feasible way was if you got court permission and you know, can't even guarantee you if we went to court that they would give you that permission because these were mom's wishes.
Yeah, these random people. What a weird way to write that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, ambiguity
is
the cause of all conflict in these documents, right? To write something like J. Marie and family to me is crazy.
Right.
So it's going to be quite an issue. I said, you know, most likely you're not going to be able to do anything with this for that 10-year period, to be honest with you.
Most likely not.
Yeah.
So
the best you can do there, you know, maybe we help her write a letter to these 10 people and set some parameters that they agree to. Hopefully they aren't too combative about it.
That's a lot of people, to have all these rights to the house. And
the intent is nice because she was telling me like, oh, they're all like family, friends and whatnot. And,
people they don't like, right?
No, not. Well, they might start not liking them, but historically, they were people that they all got along with. And the way mom worked while she was alive, she was very welcoming. And a lot of people came and used the vacation house, and they had a lot of happy memories all together.
Yes, she wanted to continue that.
Yeah. So the idea behind it is very, very nice and sentimental, but the mess that it may now be causing is unfortunate.
Yes, that's right. Vacation homes do cause a lot of issues and... sometimes we have to write up different rules for that, but I would never have put that actually in the language of the trust or the will.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of times where we want, you know, vacation properties to stay in families generationally, and there's ways to do that.
Yes.
And even with all best intents with a very well-written document, and sometimes we do like LLCs and this and that to create like a business almost out of it. Even then, there could be tons of fighting with that. You know, it gets a little, as you can imagine, when you have that many people with interests and wanting to use it on a certain weekend or whatnot.
Yeah, I have a family like that because it went from parents to kids and grandkids. Now we're getting to like 15 to 20 owners, right?
Yeah, because each generation is like bigger. Yeah.
Right. I mean, everyone's gets along. Everyone goes up and shares this tiny cabin, right? But it gets tough, and at some point you can't have that many owners, right? You're going to have to cut it off.
And when it works, it's great, right? You're keeping grandma's tradition alive or whoever it is, and we're all getting along until, you know, you turn into the Hatfields and McCoys, and all of a sudden there's an all-out battle.
Yeah. No, it's nice to think about vacation homes as we're coming into the spring.
Yeah.
I saw a sign on the highway, 6 days till spring. Yes.
So that's factually accurate.
Yes.
We'll see if the weather.
Okay.
Friday is the first day of spring. High at 47.
So slightly springish.
Well, Mother Nature isn't bringing us there yet, but close.
I prefer last week when we were in the 70s.
Yeah, that's so right. Nice. I prefer that. I'll take above freezing. I mean, that's how.
Low standards.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit HerzogLaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.